Sponsored by vivagreen-greensax.com, compostable bags for home and garden.
103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
This week The Sod Show is at Kew Gardens in London, and we're just checking out the sounds, but we're in the Princess of Wales Conservatory here at Kew Gardens, where the orchid exhibition is on. Orchids, you want orchids? They're here. Things you have never seen before and may never see again, they're right here in Kew Gardens. It's absolutely wonderful. There's animals, there's birds, and there's rocks, and there is ponding, and there is fish. They've got vegetarian piranhas here. They have crabs, they've got gecko, they've got just about everything you need to have a little indoor tropical oasis in the middle of Richmond in London. So you gotta check this place out, Kew.org. Today we are speaking with Nick Johnson, the manager here at the Princess of Wales Conservatory at Kew Gardens, and we'll be joining him in just a few moments' time. Brought to you by Greensax, compostable bags for home and garden at vivagreen-greensax.ie. Check them out on the internet. Check them out in the supermarket where you can drop them into your trolley as well. If you want to get in touch with The Sod Show, it's at Sod Show on Twitter. The Sod Show on Facebook. Sodshow.com is the web address. info@sodshow.com to get in touch with us directly via email. Right, let's get to it. Today's interview, we're talking with Nick Johnson at Kew Gardens. 103.2 Dublin City FM, this is The Sod Show. It's Brian Green on site at Kew Gardens in the Richmond area of London. And I'm with Nick Johnson, who's manager of the Princess of Wales Conservatory here at Kew. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Tell us about Kew. For anybody who knows nothing about Kew, what's Kew Gardens?
So Kew, the Royal Botanic Gardens, Kew, is one of the oldest Northern European botanic gardens. It's huge. We're more than 300 acres here. We've got more than 16,000 trees on site, but also we have some really amazing collections from around the world. We also have a huge herbarium, the largest herbarium, and possibly the largest concentration of botanists in one place in the world.
Over 700 working here. It must be a dream job.
It is, yeah. As a horticulturist, I have to pinch myself every day when I come into work, particularly in the Princess of Wales Conservatory. We've got 10 different climate zones in here, everything ranging from deserts all the way through to kind of Australian landscapes, and then we've got a big kind of moist tropical rainforest in the centre of the glasshouse.
So you can actually experience multiple seasons in a day's work.
Yeah, absolutely. I can experience multiple seasons in an hour's work here.
At the moment, you have an orchid exhibition on till early March. Tell us a bit about that.
So this is called Alluring Orchids. It's a month-long festival where we bring in around about 4,000 plants. We make beautiful displays out of orchids. At the moment, we've got a giant hibiscus flower made from lots and lots of different flowers in our main tropical pond, and we have aerial exhibits. We also have a really unique exhibit down in our darkened area in our film room, where we're showing plants under ultraviolet light so that you can see exactly what insects see in ultraviolet. Apparently insects see in a much larger light spectrum than we do. So if we looked at a rainbow, we see 7 colours. An insect would see up to 12 colours in a rainbow if it was looking at the same kind of rainbow. So it sees in ultraviolet much different kind of colours and markings on plants than we do. So we're trying to show that to people by using these different lights and bringing out the colours that insects see.
And that's important because the insects have to see these things and then spot things, pick them out and go land on them and then go somewhere else and pollinate. Do you then have insects, you know, on demand here? How do you do it here?
Well, we hand pollinate.
Oh, right. So you actually go around and you know, lift a bit here and shake a bit there.
We are the insects in this place because obviously when you're dealing with collections that in some cases are more than 200 years old, we have to guarantee the provenance of the collection. So we can't just allow a bee in here to do its work its merry way round all of the flowers and potentially produce lots of hybrids from our collection. So what we'll do is when a plant comes into flower, if we want to collect seed from it, we'll hand pollinate it, and then we'll cover the flower in a bag so an insect can't reach it and possibly cause hybridization.
To use a horse racing analogy, so you're thoroughbred, so you've got this as a stud.
Yeah, kind of, yes. We're studding our plants here. Yeah, very good.
Wonderful. Just tell us, how do you do that? Are you going to get paintbrushes out? How are you taking pollen?
Most of the time we're using things like paintbrushes. There are some very, very peculiar plants, though, some of which will only shed their pollen when they're given a certain vibration, say from a bee's wing. So we'll use tuning forks to mimic the vibration of a bee's wing in order to allow the flower to release pollen. There's all sorts of different interesting ways of pollinating a plant.
Please excuse this term in advance, but are you like mad scientists when you're doing this?
I feel more like Cupid rather than a mad scientist.
Cupid, you, okay. And with Valentine's just gone, I understand. You also do things here that nobody else does in the world with your plant list. You're getting the names, like the Latin names and the common names for all the plants, and you're databasing them. Are you adding things all the time?
Yes, this list is constantly changing. Those of us in the horticultural world will know that botanists fall into two camps. There's either the lumpers or the splitters. There's always botanists trying to change names. And so we're trying to keep up with the botanists and just make sure that everyone knows what plants they're actually using and what they're planting. This can be really important from conservation points of view. If you don't know exactly what a plant is by its binomial name, then how can you start to work out its kind of spread across a certain area? How can you then conserve it? If you can't say to people, this is this, then you're up something creek.
So if music is the international language of love, you've kind of got Latin as the international language of botany.
Yes, absolutely. Latin is the international language of science, I'd say, rather than just of botany, because obviously all animals have a binomial name as well.
And is it a living language in your area?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, sometimes, not often, but sometimes we'll have small arguments about how we pronounce certain plant names. I'm a bit of a purist in that I don't like to, I like to pronounce my C's as K's, because apparently that's how they originally did it in Latin times. But others like to soften their C's, and I'm not so into that.
There's over 1 million names in the plant list, and you can check out more at kew.org. You also have a treasure trove of seeds in the seed bank, and you're kind of protecting the seeds and making sure that they're not lost forever. Tell us a bit about the seed bank.
So the Millennium Seed Bank was started up in the late 1990s and funded by the National Lottery and numerous individuals to try to collect all of the world's flora and hold it as a kind of a safeguard. We work with a lot of partner countries now, mostly in the tropics region, to store and look after their seed, and we train a lot of people in the collection of seed from those countries as well. So more than 1,200 people have been through the Millennium Seed Bank working out how to conserve the seed from their countries. This is really important if you think about how much habitat we're losing in the world from deforestation, from agriculture, slash and burn techniques in agriculture. All of these things mean that seed banks are increasingly important. So these seed banks are there to aid restoration in the future, hopefully.
And if it was the animal world, there wouldn't be a situation where there's no dodo anymore. You would have something archived and you could put it back into its natural habitat.
That's right. It'd be like, you know, if someone in pre-colonial Mauritius had taken a load of dodo eggs and found some way to freeze them, and then someone's come along and cracked them open, well, not literally cracked them open, but got them out the freezer and germinated a load of dodos.
I haven't prepared you for this, but can you tell me three quirky things we may not know about Kew Gardens?
Three quirky things you may not know about Kew Gardens. We have a lot of interesting animals on site as well as plants. So here in the Princess of Wales Conservatory, we have Chinese water dragons walking around the tropical forest area. We have tree frogs. We also have geckos in here. We've got a great collection of pheasants and geese outside. So there's one thing, lots of animals as well as plants here. The second is that we have a lot of conservation plants here. So, for instance, in our tropical nursery, which is a behind-the-scenes area, which you can visit twice a year, you will find more than 1,000 critically endangered species and perhaps more than 40 species that are extinct in the wild, all under one roof, being worked on by dedicated teams of horticulturists to ensure their survival, either via making seed or by propagation, by cuttings. And the third one, you will find pieces of the original London Bridge on site in Kew in a couple of very hidden, undisclosed locations.
Aha. Is Kew for all the family? Would children get a lot out of Kew Gardens?
Kids love Kew. Not only do we have really interesting plants, we have lots of activities, things for the kids to do in the holidays. We have, for instance, treasure hunts. We have explorer camps. Every year in the summer we have a summer festival. So this year we're going to have a Spices Summer Festival where we'll have rickshaws scooting around the place and different spice tasting sessions and things like that. But also we've got lots of fish. We've got two aquarias on site as well. And we have some amazing art galleries here as well for those more discerning young adults who want to really get a taste of some really, really unique art. We have some incredible botanical art galleries here.
If you're coming for the day, should you give it the whole day? Is it a good 3-4 hour journey more?
Oh, I'd say if you're coming for a day, by the end of the day, you'll probably feel like you need another day here.
You're not too far from central London. I think you can whiz out on the tube in 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's about right. You can get here by tube, you can get here by bus, by train. Prince Charles even flies here in his helicopter occasionally. You could try that.
You can land in your helicopter here at Kew. 300 acres, I'm sure they've got a heli landing pad. Last question, and I haven't prepared you for this either, but we're good on lists on the Sod Show. And this is going. I know it's going to be a hard question for you. Your top three plants in reverse order.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my top three plants in reverse order. Number three, Nepenthes robcantlii. This is a carnivorous pitcher plant recently discovered in the Philippines, already extinct in the wild before it was actually described. Huge pitchers, ones that when it's full size you can fit your hand in. Number two, I'm a bit of a carnivorous plant freak, unfortunately. So I'd have to say Utricularia bisquamata Betty's Bay, which is a tiny, tiny little carnivorous plant from South Africa. It has carnivorous roots. It has these little bladder traps. That's what, hence it's called the bladder wort. And it traps its prey by sucking in the water around it when these tiny little trigger hairs are touched. And it can digest a nematode in less than 12 hours. And it's probably one of the kings of carnivorous plants, but tiny and insignificant, and one of my favourites. Beautiful, tiny little flowers as well.
And number one, drum roll,
Puya raimondii. This is a gigantic, oversized bromeliad, so it's in the pineapple family. It's from really, really South America, and it has a crazy flower that can stretch around about 20 foot high in the air, and it kills itself to flower. It's incredible. And as my retirement kind of piece, I've planted one in the Princess of Wales Conservatory. It's just a seedling at the moment, and I'm 39. When I retire, it'll be thinking about flowering. It'll be so big that it'll have to take some of the panes of the roof of the Princess of Wales Conservatory out to allow it to flower. Hopefully I'll be retired by then, and I can just leave it to my successor to deal with, and just come in and snigger at him or her while she's trying to deal with this flower.
One of those pension companies should use that story for an advertisement to say, invest now and reward later. Just those three, I detect it's for what they do, not for what they look like. It's the mechanics is why you chose them.
Yeah, it's all about the fascination of the plant world for me. It's very little about what a plant looks like. It's more how they cope with the extreme conditions that they find themselves in around the world. And that's, for me, and probably for many gardeners, that's what they'll tell you, is it's the challenge and, you know, getting the right conditions for them to make them do these weird and wonderful things that they're renowned for doing.
And with that, I'd like to thank you, Nick, for giving us your time, and good luck with the exhibition.
Thank you very much. Come to Kew.
Our thanks to Nick Johnson for his time here today at Kew Gardens and talking with the Sod Show. It's that time of the week where we do Song of the Week. And today, it's got that sound, so we're going to go for it. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
In song and in dance, I express myself as a member of a higher community. I have forgotten how to walk and speak. I am on the way toward flying into the air, dancing. My very gestures express enchantment. I feel myself a god. Supernatural sounds emanate from me. I walk about enchanted, in ecstasy like the gods I saw walking in my dreams. I am no longer an artist. I have become a work of art. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
From Liverpool to London and back again, the Sod Show plays Frank Goes to Hollywood, and welcome to the Pleasure Dome from Kew Gardens, where it's only a 25-minute tube trip away from the centre of London City. You can be transported into one of the most wonderful places I've ever been. This is absolutely Mecca for botanists, gardeners, landscapers, people interested in the outdoors. Come to Kew Gardens. If I tell you to come to Kew Gardens anymore, you'll think they're paying us to tell you to come to Kew Gardens. But the Sod Show says, make it a trip in your diary. Put it on a list. Get here in the next few months, years, this decade. Come on. Come to this place. It is absolutely wonderful. And if you can't get to Kew Gardens and you are in Dublin City, we have our own Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin. And we're often telling you about what's on there. On Saturday, the 28th of February, tomorrow, Bonsais at the Botanic Gardens with Andrew Murray. An extensive exhibition of bonsai from Andrew J. Murray's collection will be on display in the Teak House throughout March. Watch the bonsai burst back into life, displaying the splendid spring foliage and maples, cherries and many other interesting plants daily in the Teak House. That's from tomorrow, Saturday, 28th of February. Also coming up in March, on March the 2nd, the National Tree Week annual lecture, My Favourite Tree Books by Kevin Hutchinson. That's his favourite tree books, not three books. Okay, Kevin Hutchinson, President of the Tree Council of Ireland, for a review of books about trees from the earliest ones to the most recently published. Time 3 p.m. the Visitor Centre. It's Monday the 2nd of March, organised by the Tree Council of Ireland at the Botanic Gardens, Glasnevin, Dublin. And one more coming up on the 5th of March, the annual Augustine Henry Forrest Lecture, The Future Uses of Wood in Building by Annette Hart. Dr. Annette Hart of NUIG will present this year's lecture at 3 p.m. in the Visitor Centre, Thursday the 5th of March. It's organised by the Society of Irish Foresters in celebration of National Tree Week. Okay, one more, you've convinced me. Gardening Workshop, Getting a Start in the Vegetable Garden, Saturday the 7th of March at the Botanic Gardens. Our expert gardener will demonstrate how to prepare the ground and supply advice and inspiration for getting your vegetables off to a good start this spring. It's at 11 a.m. meet at the Visitor Centre. The cost is €20. Booking is essential. The proceeds are in aid of the Irish Museum Trust. If you want to get in touch with the Botanic Gardens and do that booking, all the details are at botanicgardens.ie. With that, it's the end of another Sod Show. We'll be back next week with more of the same. Well, we won't be here, but we'll be doing more similar stuff. And you can get in touch on Twitter at sodshow.com, on Twitter at Sod Show, on Facebook the Sod Show, and you can also get in touch with us via the email info@sodshow.com. With our thanks to our producer Peter Donegan, on the blogs Katrina Redmond, and on camera and video today, Vanessa Green. Hello, Vanessa.
Hi.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah. It's really warm, though.
It's so warm. That's actually something you can't tell with just audio. You can't tell how warm it is in here. On a cold February day from Kew Gardens, we're saying goodbye, and it's back to Dublin City FM. Have a great weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Welcome!